Hey everybody, this is Tim with TacticsTime.com, and today I have a very special guest, Chris Peterson. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for being here. So, Chris, you're what's your position now with the Denver Chess Club?
I'm kind of unofficially the manager of the club. I like schedule most of the events and run the tournaments. But not as a tournament director.
Okay. And I saw you're the webmaster, too. I think you did a really great job with that website there.
Yeah, I'm constantly working on it, trying to improve it some. But it's like a one-man show, so it's hard to get changes done.
Right. I really like it. If anyone hasn't been there recently, it's denverchess.com, right?
Yeah, and I got a bunch of new changes that I'm going to be uploading in the next 4 weeks, so should be good.
Oh, okay. Like, if you want to talk about those?
Well, I'm overhauling the game viewer section, so it's going to be a whole new graphical layout. Adding like a search feature to the game, so you can search the list of games. Fixing some of the login bugs and things like that.
Oh, very nice. I mean, I love the site. I get a lot of the games I use for my newsletter there, and that's been a great resource for me, and it's really nice how people can just click on the games and browse through the games, and I've looked at a lot of chess club websites, and I think the Denver Chess Club site's definitely in the top 10% or 5% of all the club sites I've seen. So great job with that.
Oh, thanks.
So how's the Denver Chess Club doing these days? I haven't been there in a while, but
there was a pretty big slump where we lost quite a few members. I think we were down to 8 at some point.
Oh, wow.
But since I started running the Tuesday night events and some weekend events, we've had a spike in membership. We got like 30 members, I think. I don't have the list with me, but something like that. And the website has definitely been bringing in a lot of new people.
Wow, that's great. So you went from 8 members up to 30. I mean, that's a huge increase.
Yeah, I'd really like to see the Denver Chess Club get back on the map as center of chess in Colorado.
Right. Well, I think you're doing a great job. I mean, I saw you have a Twitter feed now, and you got a Facebook page, and the website looks great. And do you have any advice you would give to someone who might be listening, who's a club manager looking to bring in more people?
Well, I've never started up my own club, so I don't know how difficult it would be to get brand new people. Mm-hmm. I've kind of been working off the backs of the people before me and bringing the old members back. So,
mm-hmm.
I think just offering the rated games like we do and having regularly scheduled tournaments is the best way to get people to attend. And offering the discounts for club members for the tournaments is also a good incentive to get people to become members. So.
Right. Well, yeah, that's great. I'm glad to see that. It's always good to hear clubs growing instead of dying, which has been a lot of the trend the last couple years, I think, in general.
Yeah, well, we were mortally wounded for a while, but
well, that's great. So for people who don't know you, you want to tell a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got into chess and what you like about chess?
Well, I first learned to play when I went to the high school chess club of South High School, where I went to school my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of observed and picked up how to play. Then I joined that club and participated in a couple like scholastic events.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really start playing chess in the adult world competitively until, I think it was the 2004 Colorado Open.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my first real adult tournament, and I was lucky enough to win prize money there, and I just kind of built up my rating from there.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a great job raising your rating. What would you say is some of the advice you would give to somebody who wants to raise their rating?
Well, my trick is I kind of use mostly tactics when I play. I'm a very tactical player.
Right.
And also some things to try to avoid falling into non-tactical situations is to avoid trading pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also found that when you initiate the trades, like you're the first one to capture instead of recapturing,
mm-hmm.
you kind of dwindle a position down on your own. And it's kind of hard to talk about because I haven't really thought about it too much, but I just try to avoid trades and don't initiate the trades.
Yeah, that's a little tip I haven't seen written too much anywhere, but it's like if you both have a choice of, say, for example, trading bishops or queens or something like that, if you can wait and make the other guy trade first, then you almost get an extra move in there and make him trade first. And
right, it kind of comes down to the tempos, because when you capture, you're using a tempo to move your own piece, the one that's getting taken off the board, whereas the person who gets their piece captured is recapturing with a different piece, so they get an extra move to move a different piece.
Right, and I mean, as far as leaving pieces on the board, I know what you're talking about as well, because sometimes, I mean, you'll be playing like a lower rated player and they just start trading off the pieces, and then all of a sudden you don't have anything to attack with, and that can be kind of frustrating. I mean, it can be, I think, a good strategy if maybe you're playing for a draw, or, you know, you're
and it works both for lower rated players and people that are higher rated than you, because if you leave your pieces on and you're higher rated than your opponent, you should be able to know how to use your pieces better than your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're higher rated than you, then you can use your pieces to create complications. And, like, tactics are the great equalizers.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I wanted to ask you about your game against Alex Fishbein, because that got a lot of attention, and you did quite a long video on that, and I wanted to point people at that as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about that game? It was a pretty interesting game.
Yeah, well, I haven't really played any tournament chess for a couple of years, so that was like the first real slow game that I've played.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a simul, but I still put quite a bit of effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of applied the principle of trying to avoid trades and making it complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And against the Grandmaster, that's a little scary, even with the simul.
Right.
So I was lucky enough to get white, and we just played an open Sicilian-type game. And I don't know, I was kind of excited because I was getting a pretty big attack on the king side.
Right.
And then I was also kind of proud of myself in a way, because I came up with some interesting positional ideas, which is not something I'm necessarily known for.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember what those positional ideas were?
I remember one idea, which I talked about in the video, was I was trying to take control of his d7 square, because I didn't want him to develop his pieces.
Uh-huh.
And I made the decision to abandon my attack on the king side and go for that positional bind on the d7 square.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't quite work out tactically, which I also talk about in the video, but it was a nice positional idea. So.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll put a link up there to your video so people can check that out. You made a couple other videos over the year. I remember you made the one with the Rambo theme. I thought that was like the best chess video I've ever seen in my whole life. That was just awesome.
Yeah, Brian Wall and I have been getting together a little bit to make videos for different things, and I've made some of my own, like, shout casting commentary type things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Do you want to describe some of your videos to someone who may not have seen them and would want to check them out?
Sure. Majority of them is me playing games on, like, the Internet Chess Club, ICC,
mm-hmm.
chess.com, and talking through the analysis as I'm playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that could be helpful for people who want to, see how people think while they're actually playing
right.
See if they're missing things.
Right. Yeah, I remember watching one of them the one time, and the guy, you had his f7 pawn pinned, and then you were able to come flying in with the queen, I think, on g6 or something, and, you know, you were kind of pointing out some of the tactics that come up, and that was a cool idea. I really liked that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to remember all the games and videos that I've done. I think there's like 80 of them or something crazy.
Oh, okay. Wow, nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll put a link there if people want to check them out. So what would you say you like best about chess? What attracts you to the game?
Well, it's all like one big puzzle, so I like the challenge of trying to figure things out, and that's part of the reason why I got into web development and stuff too, because there's always like a little nuance there that you have to figure out. So that's kind of why. And it's also fun to beat people.
yeah, it is. I remember the first time we played was at Anthea's 24-hour tournament, where there were like 20 rounds over a 24-hour period, and you were really low rate at the time, I don't know, 800 or something, and we played, and I remember thinking, wow, this guy's a lot better than his rating, and you know, then I think you had told me that you had played some Scholastics, and then so you're rating was a little artificially low, and then, you know, you just kind of took off, and, you know, your rating just kept going up and up, so that's great.
Yeah, it definitely kind of has a pretty high upward trend. I think I gained something like 1,300 points or something like that in like 2.5 years, something like that.
Wow, that's wonderful. So what kind of, how do you study the game? How do you improve?
Well, I like to brag that I've never read a chess book before in my life.
That's cool.
So I don't do any kind of book study.
Okay.
I honestly don't really prepare that much. All I really do is play a lot.
Okay.
Like I play a lot of speed chess, and I play with people that are better than me, like Brian Wall, Robert Ramirez, and the other experts around Colorado. And I think just getting your butt kicked constantly really helps out. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, playing against stronger players and just, you know, being around them all the time, I think, I mean, really, anything you want to get good at, it, if you hang out around people that are better than you, you can just learn so much, you know, vicariously through them and listening to them and just absorbing what they're saying and thinking about. And you know, Brian and Robert are both awesome tactical players as well, you know, so that's
right.
You know, if you miss a tactic against them, they're gonna see it immediately and punish you. So
yeah, so I'm kind of like a chess parasite. I just kind of play with the strong players.
Well, that's great too. I mean, because some people wouldn't be able to handle just losing game after game after game, and, you know, if you're willing to do that, and you know, it's a great way to improve.
Yeah, and it's always nice to be able to catch them off guard with some things or make it so it's too confusing for them.
Mm-hmm. And Robert's been improving quite a lot still lately, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, his rating has been kind of stagnant for the last few years, but over the last few months, it's definitely been rising. I think he's like 20-some-odd points away from being master now.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he's on track to be the next Colorado master.
Oh, wow.
there's several other players that are catching up pretty quick too. So.
Well, that's great. Sounds like you guys are getting some strong players there at the Denver Chess Club as well, which is good.
Yeah, it does kind of set up kind of like a gap though, because it kind of goes like up to 1700, and it kind of jumps to 2000. So I'd like to get some more like 1800s going to the club. But.
Right. Yeah. I mean that's tough sometimes when you're so close to master and you're playing, you know, B players and A players, because if you have like one off night, then you just lost 20 rating points or something. So
right.
That can be really challenging.
And gaining rating points in Denver beyond this, or in Colorado beyond a certain point, is difficult. So.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard that from a couple other people, just because we don't have, you know, like some of these bigger cities, international masters and, you know, the really, really strong players.
Yeah, there was that grandmaster that was here for a while, but he left before anyone could really take any rating points off of him. So.
Was that the Mongolian grandmaster, you mean?
Yeah, Dashreng Sharab Dorsh.
Yeah, what happened to him, do you know?
I'm pretty sure he went back to Mongolia.
Oh, he did, okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard too much about him recently. So you and I were corresponding about some general ideas about strategy and tactics and positional ideas, and it was a little hard to understand exactly kind of what you're saying over the email. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about what your philosophy was regarding chess tactics? And, you know, I may have been oversimplifying some of the things in my newsletter. I wanted to give you a chance to kind of talk about some of your philosophies about chess tactics.
Sure. Well, I've always treated tactics to be basically a means to an end, because in chess, you're always trying to set up a position where you can get checkmate at some point. And so chess is all about positional play, but you need to use tactics to get to a position that you have favor in, and you got to use the tactics once you get that position to get the checkmate. So there's kind of like they're kind of intertwined in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, does that need more explanation?
So let me just think it. So for example, maybe positionally you want to play d4 to get a space advantage, but right now it doesn't make sense to play d4 because it's attacked by three pieces and you're only defending it with two pieces, so tactically it doesn't work, but positionally it's what you want to do. So if you add another piece to cover d4, then you can push it. Is that kind of how you're saying they're intertwined, maybe as an example?
Kind of. I would look at it kind of the opposite way, where the opponent is using tactics to prevent you from playing d4.
Okay.
So he's kind of restricting your position from reaching its potential, I guess.
Right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, sometimes in my newsletters, I try to present ideas, just tactical ideas, and, you know, I'm not always giving all the variations or, you know, sometimes the guy might make a good move, but then two moves later he blunders, and the game itself isn't a perfect game, but in that particular position, he played the right move or found the right idea, at least, you know, so... But I definitely appreciated your feedback there, and
yeah, I feel like I was a little bit too harsh, but I've always kind of treated tactics as being more than just winning material or checkmate. I think it's just a way to accomplish your positional goals, because even though you have tactical motifs in a position, you don't always play them, but they're there just in case, and they're there to support your position. So.
Right. And, you know, I think that a lot of times you look at these grandmaster games and, you know, the author might be talking about, you know, why he did something for and it's a positional move, but there's a lot of underlying tactics that support that move. And if you don't understand those, they're kind of the building blocks that make all the other moves make sense.
Right, and that's probably making it more complicated than it needs to be, but it's kind of a complicated philosophy, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I like it, and you know, that's one thing I've found interesting about just kind of focusing on chess tactics on my website is that it seems like it's kind of a simple topic on the surface. You know, here's a knight fork, here's a pin, here's a skewer and stuff like that, but you know, I get a lot of emails from people and there's all kind of different subtopics just within the niche of chess tactics. You know, what is a tactic, what isn't, you know, how's it tie in with everything else, and so on. So
also another thing that I've always kind of, it's kind of like a pet peeve of mine, is when people claim something's a sacrifice or a combination.
Right.
And I have very different definitions for those two things.
You want to give your definitions of those?
Yeah, so like a combination would be any type of tactic that involves like two or more different tactical ideas, or is like two or three moves long.
Mm-hmm.
Or longer, obviously. Whereas a sacrifice is more of a positional thing, where you get like some sort of positional advantage out of the sacrifice rather than like a material advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So a combination usually ends with like checkmate, or you pick up a rook somewhere. You gain some sort of material advantage, or you just win the game outright.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a sacrifice is more long term. You might not get it back for 10 moves or something. So I've always found sacrifices to be a lot more pretty, I guess. But combinations are definitely more pretty too, I guess.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of know what you mean, because some people say, oh, he sacked his queen on h7, but then there's a forced checkmate 2 moves later, so that's not really a sacrifice, because you have a clear win with the checkmate. But if you sacrifice your rook for a knight on c3 that screws up the guy's pawns, then that would be more of a sacrifice as far as your definitions. Is that accurate?
Right. So just as an example, one of my favorite players is Rashid Nesmetinov. He was Russian champion a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
He only ever made international master. But there's a game, Nesmetinov versus Chernikov, that was, I don't know when it was played, I guess 1962. And it was in the Sicilian, and just Nesmetinov sacrifices his queen on move 12.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of the sacrifice is it strips the black king of all dark square control.
Okay.
Well, around black's king. And like he doesn't get the material back until like the very end of the game, which is like move 33.
Oh wow.
So yeah, that's like a 23 move sacrifice thing. But he didn't think he was going to get the material back right away. It was just a positional thing where he just takes control of all the dark squares in the position.
Right.
So I mean, that's a really instructive game for anyone who wants to learn about dark square control.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nesmetinov Chernikov, 1962.
Okay, you'll have to look that one up. I'm not familiar with that. So.
Yeah, and then as another example, another Nesmetinov game, this is Polugayevsky Nesmetinov in 1958, where it's another queen sacrifice, but it's more of a combination because he gets checkmate a few moves later. So those are two very good examples of the difference between a sacrifice and a combination.
Huh. Well, very cool. Any other pet peeves or things you can think about on the subject of chess tactics?
Let's see. Well, I really don't like the way that a lot of players in Colorado like go for trades. And one thing that I find is like when I play against people, they always try to trade my queens off.
Uh-huh.
I love my queen, so it's kind of a pet peeve of mine to constantly have to run it away from my opponent's quink.
And why do you think they do that?
Well, I mean, there's styles in chess, so some people like to have it more simplified, and some people like to have it more complicated. So I prefer the complicated side, and other people like simplified.
Right.
But, I mean, endgames are one of the most complicated parts of the game, so I don't understand how that really equates, but, yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, there's some players. I mean, I think Colorado has a fair amount of boring players in it, and...
yeah, it's very difficult to be like an attacking player in Colorado, where you can get your rating up fairly high because you're really aggressive and you can beat some people, but then you could lose to lower rated players just because you allowed trades to happen. So when I start playing in tournaments again in May, I'm going to focus on avoiding trades for the most part. So
right. Well, very cool. Well, thanks, Chris, for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add, or is there any upcoming Denver Chess Club events you'd like to plug?
Well, we have the Tuesday nights every Tuesday from like 6 to 11 at 2400 South Ash in Denver, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be going to that in a little bit here. But other than that, there isn't really anything planned except for the Denver Open this year.
Okay.
We had a really good turnout last year for the Denver Open, like 55 people, and gave out $1,700 in prizes. So.
Oh, wow.
So we're hoping to have a big event this year for that as well.
And is that in May, or is that, I can't remember, when do you normally have that?
Well, I haven't scheduled like the site or anything yet, but it'll be like end of May, early June.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks, Chris. Appreciate you being here today.
Yeah, make sure you send me a link so I can broadcast myself.
Okay, I will, and keep up the great work with the Denver Chess Club.
All right, thanks. You too with Tactics Talk.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Yep.
All right, bye.
Bye.